Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well podcast. We've got a fun and exciting show for you today. We're actually recording in office because we have this bigger group of learning experts with me today, so it'll probably sound a little bit different. You might even hear some background noise, some of the fun things happening around here, but we're just excited to unpack gaming today. And by the time this podcast has come out, you'll probably have already listened to our podcast discussing game theory, which was very much theory-based, and what we wanted to do was have some fun now. So I'm surrounded here by a whole group of people who like to game, and it could really be anything. So it could be video games, board games. I think the only thing we're not talking about is sports in real life, which I would love to talk about, but we'll save that for another time. So it's going to be a fun podcast, and we just have different people sharing their ideas. Our goal really is to just provide some inspiration, make you maybe a little more curious about these things and how you can apply these principles into your digital learning that you're developing. So our focus, really, we wanted to look at white hat and black hat motivations today, and then kind of discuss how certain games fit into those categories. So that's where we're headed. But before we begin, why doesn't everybody say hi, first of all, to our audience?
Hi.
Hi. Hi.
So I just thought it would be interesting we're going to go around the group here and have them share their name and kind of their role, what they do in the learning world, and then maybe one interesting fact about them and games. And if you all, if that caught you off guard, that's fine. You don't have to share an interesting fact. We'll get into all of that. So I'm going to start with Eric. Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Hi, I'm Eric. I'm a developer. I support the development team and kind of whatever they need help with, whether that's VO or implementation, design, anything kind of like that. My game-related fun fact is when I was a kid, I was obsessed with Super Mario, and I beat a Super Mario Bros. World 2 video, or sorry, a level.
Wow.
Blindfolded.
Wow.
Using only audio cues.
Wow. So so we should just stop right now. Eric wins for the day.
We're done.
Wow, that's awesome. All right, Nathan.
Hi, my name is Nathan, and I'm a lead learning experience designer. So I take the lead from the learning end on projects with our clients, walking them through the project of, you know, developing the learning from start to finish and kind of overseeing the other designers that are on the project. And my gaming-related fun fact that I get to talk about later on is that back in grad school, I actually wrote a giant ethics paper and had to give an ethics presentation on one of the topics that we're going to be talking about in a little bit. So that's exciting.
Yeah, fantastic. So I'm guessing most of us aren't thinking ethics when we're playing our video games, but we do have some interesting things to talk about when we get to that. Cool. Austin.
Yeah, my name is Austin. I'm a developer, so I do all the visuals and design on that end. Fun fact for me is I realize, thinking back now, like how much I'm actually involved in like Dungeons & Dragons world. I just, my fun fact is like everything I can always incorporate back into Dungeons & Dragons. So like my college thesis, I did like a Dungeons & Dragons presentation, but for like as like a movie title intro. And that was kind of how I capped off my senior year for college.
So Dungeons & Dragons is a big part of... You make references around the office then? Can you like basically align anything to Dungeons and Dragons?
I mean, it's such a broad like game. I use it as like a framework for storytelling. I use it as like, I mean, there's obviously a loose structure for gaming built into it. So like as we come into this topic more, like I'll have a hard time not referencing Dungeons and Dragons.
All right. Well, we'll save that conversation then. That's exciting. Andrea.
Yeah, hi. My name is Andrea, and I'm a solutions architect here, and I have a background in instructional design, so I'm super excited to talk about this. My fun fact, and I'm going to date myself a bit, is that my kids think I'm awesome because I can beat the first Super Mario Brothers. So we're talking back in the 1980s, you had to blow into the Nintendo to get it to work kind of thing.
Yeah.
my kids think I'm pretty awesome because I can beat that. Even now.
That is very impressive because I beat a level blindfolded, but I've never beat that.
I don't think you were born.
Yeah.
So there is that. Cade.
Yeah, my name is Cade. I am also a designer here, and I work with teams to
write storyboards and write scripts and just design really good learning experiences for different projects that we have here. A fun fact about myself is last night I had a Dungeons & Dragons session, and I went to dinosaur races in this world, and it was a betting arena, and I bet on one dinosaur eating another dinosaur, and the bet won. So I made money. Yeah. So I'm just jumping into D&D a little bit, but I play more board games.
Nice.
Yeah, that's excellent. So thank you all just for sharing your willingness to come today, share your background and all of that. And I don't really have a fun fact to share. It's kind of ironic that I am hosting this because I typically don't like to play games at all. But I've gotten more into it. I'm very competitive. That's the problem. So if I don't win, it's not pleasant. And I really like sports. So in that way, I like games. But I'm loving to hear all of this background with all of you and the games you're playing. So what we wanted to do today then was to talk about two different kinds of motivators. Because whether you know it or not, and those of you around the table know this, but games are built 100% on motivation, right? Like, if they weren't motivating in some way, you wouldn't play them. That's the whole point. A game has to be fun. You have to be motivated to want to start it, to keep playing. We've all had those marathon sessions where, like, I just want to make it end. Like, we've lost our motivation. And then not only motivation to complete it, but really, if the game designers are doing it right, like, you want to come back and keep playing, right? Like, we've all had those epic struggles with video games where you finally make it to the end and then you're just done. You never want to see it again. But the reason you're out here talking so enthusiastically about whatever your passionate game is because somebody did a good job. So somebody made it motivating. Let's talk first of all. So White Hat, Black Hat. I mean, I think the name to a certain degree connotes what it is. So White Hat motivators are mainly positive. Black Hat motivators are mainly negative. And in a second, we'll get into some specifics. I will also mention that we're going to put these in the show notes. So if people are interested, those of you listening, we'll have these descriptions. You should also know that this is based a lot on Yukai Chow. We've referenced him before, but we'll have links to his website, his book, all of that too in our show notes. But the important thing to note with White Hat and Black Hat is that people respond to motivation differently. Not everybody is motivated by the same thing. I think if anybody's read Simon Sinek's Start With Why, he makes a pretty good articulation for why we're motivated by different things, depending on your experience, your personality, all of that. So games use a combination of drivers or motivators, but White Hat ones tend to be positive, meaning something like you feel like you're being more creative or you're accomplishing something, or there's other ones. Whereas Black Hat ones, just for example, are things such as fear of missing out or scarcity or something like that. So that's the main difference. Now, the important thing to know when you design games, though, is that Black Hat can be really powerful, but if you use it too much, Black Hat can be overwhelming and it causes most participants just to shut down. So it's that negative piece, right? So as a learning designer, that's something we all recognize. Like, we have to use Black Hat motivation in kind of smaller doses. So what we want to do is just kind of unpack each of these, White Hat and Black Hat, and we're having a roundtable discussion here. So Nathan, can you talk to us about development and accomplishment and then put that in context of one of your favorite games?
Yeah, absolutely. So development and accomplishment is, it's been in games for a really long time. You put in a bunch of work into this game, you spend hours trying to do something, and at the very end of it, you have something to show for it. So I've been
maybe
playing...
Maybe not, if you're no good.
Yes, if you're no good, that would be unfortunate.
Yes.
So I've been playing a couple different MMOs lately, and MMOs are really built around development and accomplishment.
Can you tell our audience what an MMO is? They probably know, I didn't know, so just for the sake of clarity.
That is fair. An MMO is a massively multiplayer online game.
Okay.
So it's just a game where you get more than, like, what, I think like the average Call of Duty is like, what, 16 people in a match, 18
yeah.
people, something like that. So this is ones where you can have, like, you know, I've been playing Phantasy Star Online 2 New Genesis. You can play with 32 people there.
Okay.
Some of the other ones, you can get a couple hundred people into
okay.
a game altogether. So just lots of people. But the way that MMOs are kind of designed and structured is they make people want to invest, like, usually it's like at least 20 minutes a day. They don't need to get you sitting there for hours in front of the screen. They just want you to come back and do a little bit every single day so they keep you entertained. So they build in a bunch of different systems where there is a long-term goal that you want to accomplish, and in order to do that, you have to put in a lot of work, usually over the span of a couple days or a couple weeks, before you can finally accomplish that end goal. So the way that that manifests in, like, Destiny 2, it's a game where it's a first-person shooter, you run around, you shoot things, and you get loot from it, which is just items that you can use later on.
Okay, sure.
The way that they really build in development and accomplishment is all of the gear that you get from, you know, doing any kind of mission or story, there is a power level attached to it. Now, obviously, the higher your power level, the stronger you are. All that power is capped at a certain number. For every couple of months, they will increase that power cap.
Oh, so they keep you coming back for more then.
Exactly. Oh, okay. And they also add a little additional thing where if you really want to get that power up, you have to grind, they call it pinnacle gear, which is just extra fancy tier. It's a lot harder to get. Hmm. You have to put in extra work. You do that enough times, though, you can raise your power level up way higher than anybody else's. So it becomes really quick to see, like, just looking at the other players in your lobby, who has invested a lot of time and energy to get their power level super high, and maybe who are just some of the more casual players that get capped and don't really worry about trying to raise it above and beyond that.
Okay, no, so again, focusing on, like, accomplishing more and appealing to people who want to accomplish more and move up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, and I had not, I guess I wasn't even aware of the fact, like, the, in my head, I pictured people playing video games for hours and hours and hours, because that's what my kids did, and I could drag them off of it, and they're all angry, but this is more of a, like, 20, 30 minutes, but keep you coming back for more for that feeling of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. And they do absolutely build it into where you can play for hours and hours and hours.
Okay.
It's a mechanic called, they usually call it farming, which is,
okay,
you go to one specific area in a map, and you just play this one area for a very long time because you're trying to get one specific item. The other game I mentioned, New Genesis, there is a very popular item right now that everybody wants to get, and it's super hard to get, so you will get people going to this one area of the map, and this is where you'll get rooms like just full of 32 people, and they will just run this room for hours trying to get this one specific item so they can make all of their characters way stronger than average.
Okay, that's an interesting mechanic. I like that. Huh, okay. So, contrasting to that, we have totally different kind of game that Andrea is going to talk about just for a minute in terms of development and accomplishment.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk a little bit more about Pokemon Go, which is an app-based game. So, you know, people have varying levels of what Pokemon is. A lot of people think of Pokemon when it comes to, like, the cards that you can trade and that kind of thing, or the TV show. But me and my family really got into Pokemon Go because it's similar to almost like geocaching, where you can be out in your world and you can go and you can catch different Pokemon in different places. And we really like that part of it. But when I think about development and accomplishment with that game, it's when I first started playing from, I kind of nerded out just trying to think of it from, like, an instructional designer's perspective. Why do I want to keep coming back for more? Why do I want to open this up every day? And it really, there's an ultimate goal of leveling up. But there's small little challenges that you can complete every day that get you, that roll up into the bigger challenge. So even just catching one Pokemon, that gives you XP. That XP rolls up into how you level up to the next level. And then there's also just multiple layers that you can interact with. There's not just catching Pokemon. There's different little almost like navigation places where you can go, and you can, they call them Pokestops. It's going to sound like a foreign language for people who are not as familiar with Pokemon, and it did for me for the longest time. But there's little stops that you can spin to get items that help you catch the Pokemon. So all these different facets of the game roll up to one another. And there's just so many different layers. There's also more of, like, a social layer that we'll talk about in a little bit, where you can send gifts back and forth to your friends or postcards that you collected. When you're traveling, you can, you know, you can be out in the real world and going to really, you know, different spots and landmarks and collecting those Pokemon and those items, and you can learn more about that spot. So I love the idea of getting out in the real world and being able to accomplish something by just small little tasks that roll up into a big one. In addition to that, they're constantly keeping things new. So there's event days. that happen like one Saturday a month where you can go out and you can, they focus on one specific Pokemon and you can get a really strong one and you can use that strong one to fight other Pokemon. And so there's all these just different challenges that roll up to a larger challenge. And I think that is what keeps me coming back for more, because that sense of accomplishment that you get even from just playing for 5 minutes can really drive you to keep wanting to do it. So.
Well, and when we were discussing this, we made this assumption around the table, like, oh, Pokemon Go, it's all about social, which we'll talk about in a minute. And then Andrea was like, actually, no, I'm just motivated because I want to win, which makes sense. I played volleyball with Andrea. Like, we want to win. I totally get it. But that speaks to, like, we're all motivated by different things.
Yeah.
So, Andrea, I have an interesting thing from my end, someone who doesn't play Pokemon Go. It sounds like there are motivational factors. Like, I have friends that play Pokemon Go that have always wanted to get their step count up, right? So it's an external thing from the actual app or game itself that they seem to be tapping into, that they are pulling motivators into their universe, into their orbit.
Yes. That's a super good point, because you can, there's this function in Pokemon Go where you can have a buddy and the buddy kind of walks around with you, and as you walk further, you earn candies, and those candies can make that buddy more powerful. And so it tracks the number of kilometers that you walk, as long as you kind of hook it into your settings on your phone that allow you to, it's called Adventure Sync. And so the more you walk, the more candies you earn. And again, like, it rolls up to make that buddy more powerful. And then sometimes they have challenges that say, walk 5K with your buddy, and then you can check that challenge off once you get there. So there are so many different layers to it, which we can talk about in a bit. There's also like little eggs that you can hatch, that if you walk a certain amount, there's eggs that you can hatch that give you a strong Pokemon too.
Which are completely random in what happens. Like, what comes out of that egg, you have no clue what's in there.
Usually, yeah, there's like a set number of, a set species of Pokemon that can come out of that egg depending on what kind of egg it is. So there's just so many motivating factors that are involved in it. And you mentioned how, you know, with development and achievement, different things are going to motivate different people. So what you just brought up might be more motivating to one person over another. So
I'm already seeing, like, when the weather gets nice here in Michigan, big groups of you just, like, leaving at lunch and walking and, like...
You see hordes of people downtown walking around together.
That's fantastic.
We do have a Pokestop at the office.
We do. Oh, wow. I did not know that. All right, listeners, Pokestop at the office. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about another white hat motivator is empowerment of creativity and feedback. So... Eric, why don't you talk to us a little bit? I know your game was like mini motorways. Tell us a little bit about that. But first, tell us, what do we mean by empowerment of creativity and feedback?
The biggest thing with creativity and feedback is I think of them more as like puzzle games, give you everything you need to win right away or kind of as the game progresses, but everyone has it in advance.
So you're not searching.
Right.
Like, kidney. Okay.
Then it's up to you and your creativity to use those things strategically and effectively to win or lose. So the game that really brings this to light for me is Mini Motorways, which is a single player game on Steam and Apple Arcade. And the premise of the game is you are connecting a network of roads, or you're building a network of roads to connect destinations and houses. So destinations being like little shops or shopping malls. And as the game progresses, the shops and malls will create trips, or little like shopping trips for each of the houses. And the nearest car from the house will go pick up the trip, come back to their garage.
What motivates you in this case is it's a puzzle situation. You're trying to be as creative as you can, which is totally different. Than the other motivator, I think is from my limited experience, I think probably Minecraft is another example where you're like building things and.
The one that I think of is Animal Crossing. Just got new DLC a couple of months ago. And the entire premise...
What's DLC? I'm like the whatever the word is here. I'm just trying to make sure everyone understands because I don't. So.
Fair. So DLC is downloadable content. So when the game released like a week before the pandemic hit,
okay,
it was, you know, this was the game. DLC comes out and it adds something completely different.
Okay.
So Animal Crossing, when it first launched, was just a little life simulator game. You walk around and you catch bugs and fish. You just have fun with it.
Okay.
The DLC they released, it's called Happy Home Paradise. The whole premise is you are now an interior designer.
Hmm.
You have a client who says, I want a vacation home and I want this theme to it.
Hmm.
And so you go into this blank house. You are given a mess load of items and it's just decorate however you think will make this client happy.
Interesting.
So my wife has been playing.
I was
going to
say, I'm kind of interested in that.
That's interesting. From a scoring standpoint, I feel like that would be a bit more subjective.
Oh, absolutely
right?
It is. They give you at least, there's three items that you have to use per client, but then the
okay.
rest of it is totally
so
up to your
discretion.
There's
some parameters involved in it, but the rest you're sort of able to kind of
mm-hmm.
use your creativity.
Exactly.
So, okay.
Yeah. So my wife's been able to go really nuts with all the different ways you can design all these different rooms, like, you know. This person wants an outdoors woodsy theme. This person wants a modern theme. This person wants a antique villa theme. So.
So does Mini Motorways then, Eric, does it also, like, are there updates or things that, or is the motivation really there that you can constantly keep redesigning and reworking on your puzzle?
A little of both.
Okay.
So each week in the game, every day takes about...
Air quotes. Eric did air quotes.
Sorry.
30, no,
yeah.
Each week.
Each approximate in-game week takes about a minute, per se. And at the end of each week, you get a choice, usually, of upgrades. So they'll give you 20 extra road pieces, and then you can choose whether you want traffic lights or roundabouts. And each of those has a different use. Sometimes they're offering bridges or tunnels or motorways. And each piece will give you kind of different use. So, for example, if you were playing on a map that had a lot of mountains, you'd probably take more tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where the creativity comes in, and you can also make the decision to pick something that maybe might not be the obvious choice, but the way that you play the game will determine kind of whether or not that was the right choice.
I think the fun part of that game, because I've played it, is its efficiency. So you can never beat it in a way. You can always be more efficient in that game. So the whole goal and motivator is to be as efficient as possible.
Okay.
Use the least amount of resources to get everyone all of their trips. So you can play the same level hundreds of times by just trying to create different routes.
Exactly. And because the levels are AI generated.
Oh,
as soon as you do
okay,
something
yeah,
different,
sure.
the next house or destination might spawn somewhere
might
else
okay.
that you're not used to. So you can't optimize it the way that people would when they're like speed running a Mario level or something
okay.
like that.
So before we move on here, I do... listeners, that was Jeff, our producer. Jeff, I really should have had you. I'm putting you on the spot now. Tell everybody... what you do here, you're going to join the conversation. And if you have a fun fact about a game, because I know you play games. So
a lot of games.
I was remiss in not, like, you need to be in on this.
My name's Jeff. I work in marketing and also produce the podcast.
He makes us sound good every week.
I play a lot of computer games lately, mostly, like, realistic simulator games. Like, one I'm playing right now is, like, a war game. But
okay.
I find it interesting because of how realistic and detailed it is and how accurate all the different pieces to it are. So I like the challenge part.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's pieces to all of these that I think the realism, and maybe that's not a specific motivator, but I can't believe how realistic games are even compared to like 3 years ago
mm-hmm.
or five.
So there's
sure.
an interesting thing that you just said that I've had conversations with friends about, because some people are really motivated by that realism
mm-hmm.
where I play games as escapism.
Sure,
right?
Right.
Like I want to escape reality
yep.
sometimes, or
yep.
I want to play in a fantasy world.
Yep.
So like Call of Duty, I stopped playing it because it
yeah.
felt too real.
Yeah.
I will go and play Zelda.
Right?
Like,
yeah.
Call of Duty
yeah.
is too like simple. Like it's an easy thing. Like this game takes that and just makes it so much more complex in terms
uh-huh.
of things you do. And the training
yeah.
is about like 30 hours to like learn how to play it
wow.
kind of thing for me.
Wow.
So I just think that's fun.
Yeah.
What game would that be?
Escape from Tarkov.
Okay.
Not a friendly PC game. It's like a,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
a war game, but
yeah.
it's
right.
Very detailed, so I just find that interesting.
Okay.
I think it's just so interesting just like talking about all of this as far as how structured the games are, how unstructured they
mm-hmm.
are, and the type of personality. Like to me, having something that you describe where you'd have to use all of your creativity to kind of put together for like some, like with some parameters, sounds like not fun to me. But for me, give me Mario where you can't even go backwards. And that sounds fantastic because I know what the goal is.
Right.
The purpose of it is, I know, you know, which levels I need to pass, and it's very linear, very structured, whereas some people are just more motivated by having more of that freedom. I just think that's super interesting.
Which is a lot like an MMO, what she was talking about, where you get freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Austin, you were going to say something, I think.
No, but...
Oh, sorry, my bad.
That was me, yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay, go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, Kate, I think it's interesting you say escapism, and that's why you stopped playing Call of Duty. Like, I never played really shooter games at all because of that realism. And then I picked up Borderlands, which, if I don't know if you're familiar with it, the graphic style is very outlined and it's not as realistic.
Okay.
And I felt like so much better playing that than...
It's got like a cel-shaded comic book kind of vibe to it.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. Yeah, it does that. The aesthetic definitely changes that for sure.
And they play up humor a lot.
Yes.
Well, and then, I mean, that's a whole separate conversation we could have too, right? Like, I know when my kids were younger, it's just personal for us. So we didn't let them play when they're like 9, 10, 11 active shooter games. I mean, it's like the world we live in now, and military, like I wanted them to respect that, not think it's just a game, you know? So, and that's different for everyone, but that's how we kind of were at our house. But and they could just play MLB The Show for hours. They still do. So, but I think you're right. It, again, we speak to different motive, like what motivates people. For some of you, like you're saying, Eric, that real life was too much. Or for UK, like you need to escape, versus for some people that's very motivating. So that's a whole another aspect, all like the visual and the story of a game. And we could spend hours on that, but so let's move ahead.
See you all next week for that.
That's right. Exactly. So social influence and relatedness is a whole category that I think, especially with the pandemic, has become probably in a lot of areas of our lives more important, and people are recognizing. And I know people that like just stayed connected playing video games during that time because of the, you know, the time you could talk with people or play. But this is a specific, it's very motivating for some people. I imagine other people don't like this because they need to escape from people, but social influence and relatedness, like Pokemon Go, Andrea, is kind of the obvious first choice, although you've said you're motivated by something different. But tell us how it does function in that way, how it's motivating.
Yeah, and I think for me, in playing that game, that's how it started. So the way that it started for me, because I'm not necessarily, like, I'm not a big gamer, but my kids, who were seven, I have twin boys who are seven, were talking about Pokemon, and I didn't understand what they were saying because it sounds like a foreign language to me, and they would talk about Pokemon all the time. They wanted to download this app. My husband ends up downloading it. They would play. I would roll my eyes, and like for the longest time, I'm like, this is ridiculous. It's a video game, you know, that kind of thing. And then one day we decided to play as a family, and I got my own avatar, and then I was just like hooked after that. So, but how it began, though, was a way to connect with my kids on something that they were interested in. And I think that we can't downplay the social influence that these games have, especially for, you know, you mentioned that you can be in a room with 32 people. Like, how cool is that? That you're actually, that's also social interaction there as well, whether it's in person or whether it's in a game. But, you know, for me too, you know, with Pokemon Go in particular, you can team up with people you don't even know to defeat a strong Pokemon and capture him. So they have these things called raids that happen, and you can all go to the same location, or you can invite people to join remotely, and you all team up together to fight this Pokemon, beat him, and then collect him, and then you have a really strong Pokemon, and you worked with a bunch of people to be able to get that Pokemon, which is a really cool part of the social component to that. You know, and just the other kind of story when I think about social influence and how you relate with people is that I have a friend who plays Pokemon Go in Lansing, and since she lives in Lansing, Michigan, since she lives about an hour away, we don't get to see each other much, but every day we interact in some way because we send each other these little gifts that you can send to your friends on Pokemon Go. So, and my kids are friends with her too, and they think she's amazing because she's like the highest level of Pokemon. So she's like the queen of Pokemon.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things that my initial motivator was the social component to it.
Okay, yeah, that's a great.
Oh, I was just gonna say another like little social bit with Pokemon Go and the collecting aspect is
you can, if you have, you know, a special Pokemon that's stronger, or if it's shiny, so it's a different color, that can almost become like a bragging right sort of thing. And you can show that off to your friends socially.
Yeah. You can trade them.
You can trade.
Yeah, you can make trades. Yeah. If you're within the same proximity.
One of those cool things you were talking about, too, was like kind of like this generational coverage. Like, you can play with your kids, or even you have this like non-location-based gameplay where like you can play with your friend in Lansing, and so you can actually stay connected that way. I don't know if that's a good way for me to like jump into. Like, there's other games that I play, like Destiny.
Yeah, I wanted you to go ahead. You talked about Dark Souls and some other Destiny 2. Why don't you talk to us about that and the social connectedness?
Yeah, so Destiny 2 is the one I'm playing right now, which is kind of like this futuristic sci-fi RPG, MMO, so role-playing game, massively multiplayer online, where like you interact with a ton of people, and they don't they set up like raids like you talked about in Pokemon, but they definitely base these off of like these power levels, what Nathan talked about earlier, and they tie in like earning gear, but you can't go into these alone, so you have to have like a they call it a fire team, like you have to have people you trust and who are also capable to go through these missions. So you're relying on people, not just your own solo self, to get through these difficult, they're usually about six stages of like different mechanics that change over time, where you work as a team, and there's player like death that happens in a sense, like you have to sit out if you die, and it's usually like set to, it's like you're missing out on something that the whole team's going through, but they also can work to get you back into the game. So there's like a lot of dependence and interaction with each other in that level.
Awesome. Let me ask from another social perspective, what is your favorite emote in Destiny 2?
Oh, yeah. So, like, the way that you just make your character, like, animate in, like, a... Yeah, like, almost... It's a very, like, social, hey, how you doing wave or something. Right now, I like the one. It's a very simple one, but it's, like... It's where he's, like, pouring tea for himself, and it's just... It's very simple, but you just, like, let everybody know, like, I'm just waiting here for a moment and can take a sip of tea.
Love that.
Yeah.
Well, Cade, I just want to really, before we move on here, I want to let you briefly address, because you're like a board game person, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's sort of an obvious, we just assume, well, of course it's social. But I think different kinds of board games really, some board games, or what we've noticed, for example, like I guess one thing I do, I play with my kids is we like to play with Grandma. Grandma loves Yahtzee, and Grandma gets pretty excited. But Yahtzee is still really individual. Like, we've noticed that, because you're rolling your dice and figuring things out, and then you move on. And if there's too many people, like, you could be doing something totally different for 20 minutes while they're making. So to me, that's not so social. But are there any games you like that are specifically you feel are more social? Or I'm putting you on the spot, I know.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think there are, like, these buckets of games.
Okay.
My wife and I were just talking about this yesterday, actually, where... There are games that are competitive, there are games that are cooperative, and there are games that are co-opetition, is how we call them. So there are games that are cooperative, that they have a hidden layer behind them, where everybody has like an objective that they're trying to accomplish too. Dead of Winter is a game that does this really well. So you're basically in a colony together, and there are zombies that are trying to break through. And you,
it's a board game?
It's a board game, yeah. Okay, yep. And so you and everybody else, all the other players in the game, have to go to different locations, try to get fuel or food or, you know, weapons or maps or whatever it may be. But everybody has a hidden objective that nobody else is privy to. So you could have a game where everybody wins, everybody loses, or three out of the five win if they hit their objective.
Okay, yeah.
So it really strikes that balance between those pieces, and it makes it really fun and social, because you're also playing on dynamics of, like, can I trust you right now to be making the decision that's actually in the interest of other people?
Interesting.
So that's a really interesting game and component. But there are just a ton of different, you know, going all the way down to, like, party games, right? There's a game called Happy Salmon that you just play cards and you have to interact with everybody around the table in, like, a really high energy mode. But the conversation my wife and I were having is around, does she like the actual game itself when we go and play? Or is she just, like, hanging out with people? And the game is the medium that brings us all to the table.
Yeah.
And so we have a ton of board games at home. And I was asking, like, hey, let's get Gloomhaven, another board game, to the table. And she's like, well, it's like 3 hours. I'm not sure how much I want to invest in that, right? I'm interested if we can get our friends to come to the table and do it too. You and I can go do something else. So for her, the social component is very, very motivating for her. And that's what she finds most interesting. And for me, it's probably a 50-50.
Right, sure.
So it's really interesting to see what brings people to the table for board games specifically.
Yeah, well, let's, and I think this really ties into our last white hat motivator, which is epic meaning and calling. And the reason I say that is because, so epic meaning and calling typically feels like, and we're going to let, I'm going to let three of you guys here talk about it, but typically you feel like you're like reaching again, this sort of like, I have this greater purpose. And so I'm striving for it. It feels very individualistic. But then we actually had kind of an argument when we were planning this, not an argument, but a discussion, because Austin was pointing out that, like in Dungeons and Dragons, it's all about winning as a team. It's not individual and you can't win. So let's talk about that. Nathan and Eric, maybe first talk to us a little bit about what is epic meaning and calling, and kind of what does that look like in more of these games? You were like single player, story driven.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it was funny because this definitely was a controversial topic, because I hear epic meaning and calling and it's talking about how you as the player, there's something, some bigger goal that you're trying to accomplish that just makes you kind of just feel lofty. It's not development and accomplishment where you're trying to raise up your power level or something like that. It's more of there's a quest.
A purpose bigger than yourself, almost.
Exactly. Okay. You're accomplishing something not for you. Like in development and accomplishment, you're trying to make yourself better. In epic meaning and calling, you're trying to make the world better.
Okay.
And so when I heard this, my first thought was like, well, what kind of games really do this well? It's really good story games.
Mm-hmm.
And from my experience, most of the best story games come from single player games.
Hmm.
And that's when Austin interjected and he's like, well, it's not always just single player games.
Right.
There are multiplayer games.
Have you heard of Dungeons and Dragons?
Right. To go back to your point. Yeah, why don't you tell us, Austin, so tell us a little bit for those people that aren't familiar with Dungeons and Dragons, or what's the premise there?
Yeah, so I think the point you're pointing to is the story kind of sets the tone for all the epic and meaning and calling. So Dungeons and Dragons is basically like this social game where you sit down and tell stories with each other, and then there's this modifier of the game that happens when you roll dice. So like you might all agree on a story you want to tell, and it could be this epic meaning of like there's dragons attacking the nearby town and you have to go defeat the dragon and save the townspeople, or as small as like if you all agree to it, like it's as small as like, hey, to social interaction, you can, to get information on what you need to do next, you need to go help out this baker who's running out of things and you need to find out what's happening. So there's like an investigation going on there. But basically everyone sits around the table, develops this story together, and the person running the game, the dungeon master, kind of like help direct what the next steps are, and then they can choose as a team or not to interact with these things, pass by these things, and then the dice kind of determine, as well as their interest in it, like whether or not they pass or fail these things, and it kind of like, as a group, they unfold the whole story.
So then it's kind of up to the dungeon master then to create that epic meaning?
In a sense, it's up to the dungeon master to play out or like to describe the epic meaning, but it also like I said, if I'm like, hey, there's a big dragon over there attacking this town, and they're like, we as players don't want to fight a dragon, we know we couldn't deal with it, so they can like change course and be like, actually, we need to like go talk to the baker, get some resources, level up, investigate this other thing, and so there's a way to tangent around, and then maybe they end up going back to the dragon or not, or they may just have a moral failure in a sense of like, they're just like, I can't go defeat that thing, I'm gonna, like, the player is going to just run away, which is a fair point, like, we would all run away from a dragon.
Yeah.
So that made me think, me and my buddies were playing Starfinder once, which is, it's like Dungeons & Dragons just set in space.
Okay.
And we had our...
Is it a board game, though, or is it, it's a video game?
It's a board game,
a tabletop game is kind of like you can play it on tabletop.
Okay, gotcha.
It's not like a derogatory term. It's just it just describes it better than just being like a board game, because
right.
You're kind of committed to it just being on a board.
Yeah, gotcha.
What's really cool about tabletops is they used to be called just pen and paper games, because really all you need is a pen and a piece of paper and you can do everything you need. It actually got really big in the prison systems for a little while, because obviously you don't have access to a lot of things in prison.
Right,
so you have
right.
pencil, you have paper, and you have someone who just knows the base rules of the game, and you can play.
Okay.
But going back to crafting your own story, me and my buddies were playing Starfinder once, and we were in a spaceship, and we got to a point where it's like, all right, there's this giant, nasty asteroid belt that you have to go through, and it's full of pirates and raiders and all sorts of nasty things. And that's where our dungeon master, or game master, was trying to get us to go. And one of my buddies is like, well, we're in space. Space is 3D. Let's just go up and around the asteroid belt instead. And our dungeon master, his face just drained. He was not prepared for this. Yeah. Like, oh, okay. I guess you do that then.
He should have applied some white hat motivators to get them to enter.
I know, right? I wasn't thinking, right. All right, well, I just so appreciate all of your thinking on this. I think we could probably do this forever. But we are going to, just based on our conversation now, we're going to stop. We're actually going to have a sort of a second segment of this where we discuss black hat motivators, as I think it'll be an interesting, you know, in the interest of time for you, our listeners, focus on white hat here. But I thank you all for your time, and I thank you, our listeners. We know your time is a gift, and we really, really appreciate you spending it with us. If you want to interact with us, you can always check our social media under InnoVersity, but Instagram, LinkedIn especially. You can look for the Learning Well podcast and comment.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.